Welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast. It's Matt here, the founder at Sweat Elite and co-host of the Sweat Elite podcast. Thank you for tuning into this episode. This episode is another episode of Hang With, where I hang out with a professional athlete, coach, or figure of the sport. And this week, I hang out with Rudy Von Berg, who is one of the strongest long course male Ironman triathletes in the world. Rudy was fourth at last year's Ironman World Champs in Nice, and this year will attempt to improve on that result at the Kona Ironman World Champs in October, where hopefully he can get on the medal podium. And he has plenty of goals in between now and then. He's recently just competed the first two T100 events in Miami and Singapore, of which both didn't really go to plan for him. And we speak in this episode a little bit about what he thinks went wrong. Rudy's also gearing up for Challenge Roth, that he's been very interested in trying to podium and ideally win this year before going after the Kona Ironman World Champs. And of course, there are plenty of races in between those two races as well. It was awesome to catch up with Rudy. I was actually in Boulder last month and did a training session with him and Tyler Butterfield, which was a lot of fun, where I actually got to meet Rudy properly. So it was awesome to have him on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to hopefully doing some video content with him in the near future. But Rudy was great to chat to. He's also a Garmin athlete. We talk a lot about the Garmin 955 that he wears and how he uses it. We speak about diet. We speak a lot about training, VO2 max, threshold, a lot of LT1, LT2 talk. I'm sure you'll love all that fun stuff. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Rudy just after I thank the sponsor of the Hang With series. The sponsor of the Hang With series is Precision Fuel and Hydration, my go-to nutrition brand that make, in my opinion, the best gels, carb, chews, drink mixes, and electrolytes in the world. Precision Fuel and Hydration are the brand partner of many of the world's best, especially triathletes, but also runners as well. And I talk about this on every single podcast, I'm aware, but at least the ones that Precision Fuel and Hydration sponsor. The carb chews and the gels, especially the caffeine gels, are probably my favorite products. I use most of their products. I use one of their PF 1500 sodium capsules in the morning with water, 1500 milligrams of sodium every morning as I wake up and before I go for a run. And I also use their carb chews before most hard workouts and also their drink mix throughout most hard workouts as well. The caffeine gels go down very well in marathons. I try and use about one an hour while using the other normal gels throughout the race as well. But all the gels have 30 grams of carbs, which is pretty much the upper limit for carbohydrates in gels. And yeah, just a huge fan of everything that they do over at Precision Fuel and Hydration. You can score a 15% off discount off your first order by using the code SWEATELITE at checkout. And there's also a link in the description of this podcast episode that will take you straight there with the link, with the code automatically in use as well. So you don't even have to put the code in. If you click the link, it'll take you straight to the website and you can score the 15% off. All right, guys, hope you enjoy this conversation with one of the best Ironman triathletes in the world, Rudy Von Berg. Rudy Von Berg, welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast. You're in Boulder. I'm in Chicago, similar time zone, but you're a few days now, or almost a week now, post Singapore PTO. How are you feeling today before we can dive into the details of Singapore PTO?
I've been taking it really easy since the race. The race was a Sunday evening or afternoon evening into the evening. Singapore time, and then it was a quick night to pack everything, and then the next morning 6 a.m had to get out and do 24 hours of traveling. So yeah, if you take all these factors, just the really long travel, the heat over there, and the race, I wanted to really take a full easy week now to really recover before kind of, and even lose a bit of fitness before really building now for San Francisco and then Roth more specifically. Yeah. So today's, yeah, Friday, 5 days out. I've done only, this morning was my fourth workout of the whole week. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The travel can be brutal, especially when you're changing temperatures so severely as well. And you've gone from Singapore that most people would know is just, you know, in Fahrenheit, probably 85, 90, just consistent humidity, to going back to Boulder to and from. I mean, these things can really knock you about as well. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about PTO Singapore. I did a workout with you in the lead up. I honestly left that workout thinking, man, like, it'd be really hard to beat Rudy, especially if he comes down to a run leg. There's, you know, so much we can talk about here. There's so much left to go in the season. But in reflecting on Singapore and a performance that you thought was probably not what you were capable of, it would be awesome to hear more about your thoughts about how that all went down, and then what you can look to improve upon this year. Because I shared with you before hitting record, I've watched pretty much all of your videos now, and I know the full season plan. It's very ambitious, very exciting. Lots of Ironman races. There's obviously Kona, Roth, PTO series. There's lots going on, but let's talk about that. Singapore.
Don't add anything to that. and PTO series done.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk Singapore. How was the travel over there? How'd the race go? And then we can go from there.
Yeah, I left on the Saturday, 8 days before the race. But if you add the 14-hour time difference, I got there Sunday evening. And yeah, so I wanted to get there a week out to first recover from the travel, have enough time of recovery before doing the little taper interval sets of the like Wednesday, Thursday, you know, a few days before the race. And also to get a week, because usually you get, starting from 7 days, you really get adaptation to heat and humidity. But you get like 85 or 90% of it. So I was like, okay, if I'm there for a week, that can be pretty, yeah, I'll just be well adapted to the heat, even though on top of having done the heat prep here in Boulder. So yeah, I felt like I had a good plan going into that race. As far as how I felt fitness-wise for the three sports, swim and bike were kind of a little under par, or just I didn't feel super good in them. But still, like, okay, like, I can still be in the race and then produce a good run and, you know, maybe crack the top five or something. Which, I mean, if you look at the race in the end, David McNamee, who was with me the whole bike, and we started to run together, he finished fourth. So, you know, we were still somewhat in it. But yeah, in the end, I mean, the course was quite good in Singapore, off three, swim, bike, and run. So the swim, we had a 1K loop and then came out, Aussie exit, and then kind of another K in a different direction. And I was still with the leaders after the first K, but the water was almost 88 degrees. And it was just like a little too fast for me. I felt like my heart was in my throat and I couldn't follow the second K. So I exited the water 50 seconds from the lead. But that's still like, okay, you know, I can still have a good bike, still have a good run, you know, it's not that big of an issue. On the bike, I lost a bit more time. Sam Long passed me towards the end. Yeah, definitely not what I can do on the bike, but yeah, I'm just going to have to work on that right now. Usually the bike is what comes easier to me, but yeah, I'm not sure because I've been really consistent in January, February, March on the bike mileage, but yeah, we'll have to see. Still analyze that with my coach, I think. Go back a bit to the basics, do a bit more zone two riding, a bit more long rides, easy long rides. I think I maybe had a bit too much intensity. Hard to say. So T2, I was in T2 in about 4.5 minutes behind the lead. Not great, but I mean, again, as I said, still in contention to have a good run because in those conditions, you know, 4 minutes, you can catch 4 minutes. A lot of guys are crumbling. And yeah, I was feeling confident. I paced the bike well and wasn't dead for the run. Unfortunately, after K and a half, I mean, I just knew it wasn't going to happen. My mid back was super tight. My stomach was cramping a bit and just my whole body felt completely stuck. And my heart rate was somewhat high too. Just like, you know, just can't run. Like I was running over 4 minute Ks, 4:10. And then it loosened up towards the end, but, you know, only after 10, 12 Ks out of the 18 K run. And then ran a bit quicker, but still didn't feel that easy. And yeah, so finished 11th. I thought I was in the top 10, which I would have made quite a bit more prize money and at least break even on the trip. But with the cost of the flight there and everything and the extra hotel nights, I didn't even break even on my trip. So,
damn. Well, I appreciate the brutal honesty there. And I mean, one thing that I think a question I was about to intercept you with, but I thought I'd let you finish is, in one of your videos around 2 months ago, you said that you're working pretty hard on VO2 max and speed stuff. And then you sort of just mentioned then that, oh, it might be about going back to doing a lot more long stuff and zone two work. And there's an argument to say that there's the time of year to be focusing on specific zones and speed could make sense earlier in the year. But in reflection of the comment that I just listened to and then hearing you say that, like, what would you say to that? Do you feel like the training that you've been doing that's been more speed-based has been setting you up well for sort of performing when it really matters? And I think, I don't know, I'd like to hear from you. In my opinion, you performing really well when it really matters would probably be in Roth and beyond, right? Like those few months. Yeah. So what would you say to that?
The idea behind a bit more trying to increase my VO2 max was, well, first, it's not naturally super high. Like I'm not a Blumenfell or whatever. But last year I did pretty much only full Ironmans. So it would make sense coming back to a T100 series to, you know, increased that ceiling a little, worked on that VO2 max a bit throughout the winter before kind of going back to the more the base and LT2 work. So yeah, we did that a bit more. On the bike, well, all three sports really. And but I think, I don't know, in the past I've responded really well to VO2 work, but maybe the VO2 work we did was too long in the specific session. Like I've responded well to VO2 work, but only short VO2. And then also another consideration is I think I respond better to more to Ironman training rather than more 70.3 training, where there's a bit more high intensity. Because when I do Ironman training, I kind of, well, I also have longer periods to train, which make me build slower step by step, rather than when I get a bit insecure, race is a bit too close. Like this year in the beginning of March, I always mess it up in the sense that you go a bit too hard too early, and it's almost like you're skipping the first steps. And yeah, and I'm not the type to always go hard at all or like have an easy run and end up in threshold. Like it's not like I completely change workouts, but it's kind of subtle things of just, it's important in the first few workouts of the year, the first weeks, to just kind of throw pace out of the window and not care and actually go look, cause to actually be sure. Yeah, you're just building throughout the weeks. And yeah, as I said, when I do Ironman training, I tend to do that much better. So
interesting. So coach at Sweat Elite Coaching Academy, Casper, asked me to ask you, how excited were you for the Singapore food?
Yeah, I mean, we were in the center. There were restaurants everywhere, but it wasn't that easy at first to find good food. There were a few little spots, but yeah.
Fair enough. So you're back in Boulder now, and I guess back to it, and you mentioned a couple of races coming up in the near future, San Francisco, and then obviously Roth, which is a big one. I'm excited to talk to you more about sort of where your head's at with preparing for them. We've already sort of touched on that a little bit, you know, sort of extending that long workout. But I don't know. I had such a good time training with you and Tyler last month doing that workout. We did 6x2K up at the track in Niwot, and you were rolling. Yeah, sorry, I did 6. Yeah, you did 8. And I remember very clearly in the warm up you were sort of saying you didn't feel very good, and then you managed to do them all in under 5. Well, it was right around 5:20 mile pace, or 3:20 to 3:22 per K, and you were pretty comfortable. So clearly, there's some phenomenal shape sitting there to be used, but. What does the next sort of couple of months look like? And then a question I'm regularly asked to ask professional athletes is, and this is a great one for you because you have so many big races and so many goals, how do you periodize the training? It's a very broad question, I'm aware, but how do you sort of view the tapering and the peaking and where that will lie over these next, 7 months leading into the big one, Kona, at the end of the year?
Well, the idea this season is to build towards, to have two peaks, essentially build towards Roth, which is beginning of July. And then, build again back for Kona, end of October. So that's, that's easy enough, you know, kind of do two builds throughout the season. It's hard to really peak three times during the year, especially if the second race or if the last race is not in November or December, you know. But so that's kind of the general idea. And then, and as far as periodization, as I said, that's kind of a bit more down to the athlete himself rather than the coach, at least in my case. But I think it's really important in my builds to actually build throughout the weeks. Start by throwing pace out of the window and not really care too much about it. Go on the really comfortable side and only push a little when you're getting close to the race. I think doing that really has a solid periodization effect where you can reach your peak.
So the other races in mind, the other PCO races and the other sort of races in the calendar, you sort of just train through them without any real taper down, or how do you sort of view that?
No, well, so San Francisco, it is part of the build for Roth, let's say, but I mean, I'll still taper for it. And I think it's 3 or 4 weeks before Roth, but I don't have any racing. So now we're, April 20, April 19, and San Francisco, it is June 12, 13, 14, around there. So there's plenty of time to do a good build and then, do San Francisco, a bit of rest. A week later, it will be 2 weeks out from Roth, which is kind of a big kind of race simulation day, where usually I do about 180 Ks bike with 4 hours kind of race pace, 4 hours straight, and then into, depends, hour 30 to 2 hour max run. Kinda mostly at race pace too, 4 by 25 minutes or stuff like that. So in that sense, I think that it works well because I can have a good stimulus 3 weeks out. I have to look if it's 3 weeks or 4 weeks before from Roth exactly. But I have a good stimulus in San Francisco. Yeah, rest. Be rest enough for that big break and then travel to Roth 10 days out.
Roth is going to be a good one. I've heard the start list is going to be strong. I mean, it always is, but I feel like this
year. Stronger every year, it looks like.
Yeah. Who do you think will be the big guys to beat then?
A few years ago, they just had like Jan, Keenle, and maybe one or two others. But now I feel like they're having, yeah, a lot of heavy hitters every year. Well, for this year, actually, more on the men's side, it looks really stellar. On the women's, it's a bit, they have a few stars, but it's a bit weaker.
Who do you think are the main guys to challenge up in Roth? Who do you feel like are going to be the dangerous guys? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to those that watched in the last few years, but who in your mind are the guys to really be up there in the podium?
I mean, Patrick, Magnus, obviously, winner last 2 years. Daniel Backegaard. I don't remember the whole star list in my mind, but yeah, those are definitely a few of the main guys.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple of questions that came in that I wanted to ask before we talk more about the rest of the season. This is a good question, actually, that I am asked sometimes, but I think you would give a good answer. You know, you've spoken a little bit already to like what you feel works for you, the long work, obviously pushing really hard once the race gets closer, and then some of the shorter PSU max works. But when you're building into a race, let's say you're 4 weeks out, you're in pretty good shape, Roth is coming up. What are some of the key run workouts that you would feel like would be the best bang for your buck at that point to prepare you for a race? Like we did 2K reps, you did 8 of them. That was a pretty key workout for you leading into Singapore. You know, how Singapore went down is a different story. Obviously weather and travel and so forth probably hindered the race. But what are some of your more key workouts that you find really move the needle for you when you're getting close to a race on the running leg?
Well, let's talk more on the Ironman side. I think to alternate between the LT1 workouts and the LT2 workouts work really well for Ironman. Because LT1 essentially, I mean, it's just upper endurance. So if you do it correctly, like it's just, it doesn't really impact your body too much. I feel like a lot of people will do LT1, but actually they'll do like slow LT2. So they'll actually be more, yeah, just more in the LT2 phase rather than actual LT1. Because, I mean, the LT1 threshold, there's a threshold there, right? And people are always like, oh, I'm going to go right at the threshold or maybe a bit quicker because I'd love to go quicker on race day. But actually, it's like totally the opposite. If you go just a little under, that's how you'll run your fastest LT1 come race day. So, and then same thing for the LT2. So in the build to do those two, to alternate between those two, I think has worked really well for me last year. And as far as specific workouts, I mean, so the LT1s, I'll have some like workouts. Those are just kind of base runs where I have maybe 3 by 20 minutes during the run, LT1. Training shoes on flat trails, like, as I said, not stress on pace. I'll go maybe 4 minute per K, even start 4:10, you know, like most pro women will do their LT1 quicker than that. Just saying, but by now you get the idea, you know, I'm just building into it, not stressing. And then I'll have also some key LT1 runs that are off the bike. And usually those will be pretty similar, hour 20 to hour 45 on the longer ones. Like for example, last year of 3 full Ironmans, I did one run that was 2 hours or a tad over 2 hours. All the other ones were under. And then the LT2 workouts, I mean, those are pretty standard. It's like 4x2K, 4x1K, for example. That's a good one. Or if you want to run a bit quicker, just straight 12x K. And then I'll have some where it's also maybe 8x K, 10x400. But pretty standard workouts like that. It's nothing super fancy.
So how are you measuring? Like, I really like the statement about like, if you just stick to the right intensity, LT1, LT2, that's where you're going to be. Pushing above doesn't make any sense. Like, that's very clearly proven. How are you measuring that though? Are you measuring it by a heart rate device? Are you measuring it via a lactate device? When you were at the track with me, you did a little bit of lactate testing, but not too much. I think you took it maybe after the fourth and eighth rep from memory. But yeah, if you could speak to more like, how are you actually tracking this? Because part of the reason for the Sweat Elite podcast is to actually learn from professionals, right? It's to actually understand how people are performing the way they are. Talent is a huge deal. Motivation is a huge deal. But these little things I think are really interesting to people, and understanding how do you know where your LT1 lies? Because that depends on so many factors. But then how do you sort of track this and make sure you are in the right zone, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the most two important things are feel and actual lactate reading. So I haven't done an Ironman build this year yet. So and maybe that's a mistake this year, I've actually taken quite a bit less lactate readings this year, but I'll do it for my Ironman build. For those runs, for example, I would run with a Compressport, has these like trail belts. They're just like soft fabric belts, but it's, you can put stuff in it. So I would literally do the whole run with my lactate meter and strips and prick and little paper towel. Like, that's all you need. And I would aim for 1.3 millimoles or under. And sometimes even a 405, 410K, like on the first 15, 20 minute, I would be a bit high, a bit too high.
Wow.
Even though it should be a very easy pace, you know, for a professional athlete. But pretty much what I said. And feel should be, for LT1, you know, it should be very comfortable, at least in training. And if it's off the bike, it'll be a bit harder, but you definitely have to feel like you can hold it for a very long time. And same thing for LT2. Check it quite a bit. Aim for upper twos at the most. And
just making sure you're not going too high over that.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. I appreciate that very much. One really strong topic of interest amongst especially professional Ironman athletes is food and diet. I haven't really spoken to you personally too much about this topic. We've spoken a bit about training and travel and so on, but how do you do this? How do you plan for it? Do you plan for it? Do you have a calorie amount that you hit? I'm always curious about the fueling of especially Ironman athletes that are preparing to just, you know, train for. How many hours a week do you train? I guess it's probably close to 30 or above.
I'm under 30 on average for sure. I know some athletes can sustain around 30 or a tad above for multiple weeks. But when I'll hit a 30 hour week, you know, at a peak, but I can't really sustain it. I feel like I'm good at 26, 27 hours.
Okay.
So as far as food, well, as athletes, we never really want to have the energy or really want to, at least that's not me, I want to take time to cook much. So it's always I want it to be ready in 10 or 15 minutes, you know? It's 80-20 or 90-10 rule, you know, it's like try to have a solid, healthy base, but then on the side, kind of supplement, if I can say, with the kind of more unhealthy foods, but that are kind of calorie dense and that will kind of top off your stores in a way. I eat everything, but I don't count my calories. I definitely focus on having, well, first, enough carbs. That's kind of the base. And during all workouts as well, even if it's an easy swim, you know, I'll put some NeverSecond in my bottle because you're always thinking about the next workout, right? And then protein, about 2 grams per kilo of body weight. So probably about 150 grams from you per day. And actually, sometimes it's kind of hard to hit because one day last year, I just randomly counted my protein and I was a little under. And even on that day, I did supplement with smoothies and stuff like that. So you kind of got to be somewhat on it for that. And then I don't eat enough vegetables, actually. Or just vegetables in general. When I go home to France, we always have the salads and all the vegetables. So I'll definitely eat enough when I'm there. But when I'm home in Boulder, since I'm kind of more focusing on carbs and protein, forget about the vegetables a bit. But I think that's somewhat of an overview.
Yeah, for sure. So How long have you lived in Boulder now? Because one thing I didn't realize, and I was a bit embarrassed when I connected with you somewhat recently, because I'd actually emailed you before. How long have you spent living in Boulder? I'd like to hear more about how you feel Boulder is as a training environment, comparing to other places around the world that you know of, right? There's like St. Moritz, there's Font-Romeu. Maybe both those two places are probably not the greatest places to live long-term because they're very small. But I'd love to hear more about,
Yeah, well, I've been in Boulder since I moved here when I was 19 for college. Did a business marketing degree at Colorado University in Boulder. And so now it's been 11 years in Boulder. And no, I haven't been to St. Moritz or Font-Romeu, actually. But first time last year, I did a few weeks in Girona in May because I had appeared, I raced the PTO in Ibiza, what was the end of April? And I was going to do over 2 months or almost 3 months or something in Europe. And I didn't want to be at home for the full 3 months. So it was a good opportunity to check out somewhere I've never been. So Girona was, went to Girona. That was quite nice. Really nice training. Great riding. Good mix of kind of, you can still do enough TTing, but at the same time have really cool roads that kind of go everywhere. And trying to think where else I've been. I mean, south of France, obviously. But for triathlon specific, for example, it's a bit hard. Well, there's just more traffic. So for driving to trails or driving to the pools, all that just takes a bit more time. What's really nice with Boulder is just quality of life is so high in the sense that you don't have to drive much. Everything's so close. Everything's here. Like my car, for example, that really tells the tale. I bought a car in 2017 and it has 30,000 miles now.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I'll have periods in Europe where my car doesn't get used, but still, I mean, I drive to the pool, it's like 7 minutes and the trail is 4 minutes. So, I mean, Boulder's amazing for that. Just so many athletes here. You can train. I say that you can train with so many athletes. I actually don't train with that many athletes because I just find it hard to always coordinate with other athletes. So it's good to have just a couple go to like Tyler for running or and then some swim sessions. But when we're training three times a day, it's just hard to always be texting people like, what are you doing? And coordinating on times and we have different coaches and everything. But of all the I've also enjoyed training in Maui, in Hawaii. That's just kind of more of a winter thing. It's not like you would want to live in Maui, probably a bit too far from everything. But the riding's real nice. So it's nice to go there in the winter, some pretty epic loops of the island and obviously great rough weather. Not much dirt running or pretty much zero. But yeah, pretty much of all the places I've been, Boulder, I mean, the running is really world-class. Just you can run from anywhere. Everything connects. Dirt roads, trails. I mean, the running's amazing here. The cycling's really good for triathlon. You can do, as I said, I mean, I did like 180Ks in 4 hours 16 on the brick day last year. And, you know, you definitely couldn't do that in France. Girona probably would be difficult for like on a big loop. And then the swimming, I mean, yeah, there's just a lot of clubs around. The two main clubs actually in Boulder closed recently. But one of them, a Lifetime, is going to reopen at that spot. So the downtown Boulder club. So,
Yeah, it is such an awesome place to train. And I'm looking forward to getting back there in a couple of months. Hopefully I can join you for some workouts if it suits. And funnily enough, the next question I had was going to be about athletes that you train with. I know you do a little bit of training with Tyler Butterfield, who's now turned to the marathon. And he's running pretty well in the marathon. He ran pretty well the other day in Boston. Is there any other athletes that you link up with? And also a question I'd like to ask is, if you could link up with any athlete in the world to train with outside of Boulder, who would it be? And you can name a few if you like.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great to train with Jan Frodeno, get some insight. And I hear he's coaching now. Maybe he should coach me.
I've heard that too.
And I mean, in Boulder, well, I have a few roommates that are athletes. And one in particular, he works at Training Peaks. He's like a top age grouper. He's done a few of my runs off the bike, actually with Tyler too. Mostly running. He's quite a good runner. We don't swim or bike together much. And then the Brazilian Andre Lopez, we did quite a bit of training last year. He was coached by Julie Divins, but then went to self-coached. And so he was kind of following what I was doing a bit. That's mostly it for recently. Last year, since Holly Lawrence moved to Boulder, I was swimming with her quite a bit. But then this year, since the club where we were all went closed, it's been a bit more difficult to sync up because, yeah, well, she goes to the Y in Lafayette or wherever it is where Julie has her swims. I haven't joined that. I'm at another club. Yeah, it's just been a bit tougher to coordinate. I do join in the winter more on some of the ITU squads swims. At least last year I did more. This year I did a few. Chase McQueen, Kevin McDowell, those guys.
Sprinters.
What's that?
The sprinters.
Yeah, like I'll go on a day like once a week max, right? Where I'm ready to go hard, you know? And yeah, that's about it. I mean, a few guys here and there. Sam Appleton, Chris Lieferman, Justin Metzler.
Yeah,
but I haven't done something with them in a while now. So, yeah.
Okay. When I was running with you in Boulder, we were discussing. We're both Garmin athletes. I'm aware that you're a big Garmin athlete as well. We were talking a bit about the watch and some of the metrics. Let's talk a little bit about that. How have you found the? It's a 965 you're using as well. Is that right?
It's the 955. I do have the 965, but I haven't switched to it yet.
That's right. You told me you're on the 955.
Yeah, the exact same.
Yeah. How are you finding it? Do you find the sleep tracker to be useful? I know that you said that one of the sort of jokes we were having in the warm-up was your sleep tracker told you there's something that you weren't very sure about, and then you ripped the workout super well. So how are you finding it, and what sort of functions are you finding useful with the 955?
Yeah, well, so I've never used, to preface this, I've never used any sleep tracking or anything, or HRV tracking or of any sort. And since I got into Miami, the T100 Miami, pretty fatigued, I felt like if I did track my HRV and stuff like, because like my heart, I couldn't get my heart rate up anymore essentially before Miami. So I figured that meant I had pretty low heart rate elasticity, which the HRV could have told me before the race, and maybe I'd have backed off a bit earlier. So I started, tracking that on my Garmin after Miami. And that particular morning, which was maybe about 2 weeks after Miami, I said my training readiness was 5, I think, out of the max is 100, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I was pretty worried about the workout. You remember? I was like, oh, guys, I have no idea how this is going to go. Like, it might just be terrible. My training readiness was low. My HRV wasn't too bad. Since I've been tracking it, the max has been 103. So not that high, but like I had a whole week straight where I was between 100 and 103. So I figured that when I'm like, and I was feeling decent that week. So I'm figuring that's like kind of a good baseline for me. In the end, the workout went quite well. And I track also, just the quality of the sleep. So it gives you the amount of time in REM sleep, deep sleep, awake, or light sleep. Gives you a sleep score. That HRV. Well, it also kind of just tells you the exact time when you fell asleep and when you wake up.
Is there anything else on the watch that you find useful? I mean, another question, I guess, is about the sleep. One thing I've noticed is like I have the same, sleep tracker, not the same watch, the 6.5, but I don't know what to really do with the numbers sometimes. It's like, do you do anything as a result of seeing the numbers? Do you optimize anything with the sleep? Is there any supplements that you take to improve that or anything that you do to adjust as a result of seeing the numbers?
I haven't gotten to that point yet. No,
neither.
So I'm trying to see if there's stuff I can learn or see patterns or anything, but it's been now what, 3-4 weeks. I think it's interesting to see. I might be able to learn from it, but yeah, as I said, I'm not there yet where I can really know what it means. I feel like I don't have enough weeks behind me, but it was interesting, for example, having it on, using it for the travel to Singapore and coming back. So for example, I traveled, week out, and based on the HRV, so I was at 100 before traveling. And then it went to it was still at 95 after traveling when I got there. But then it went down in the 80s, and then 80, 83, 84, 85 a few days after travel. And then by race day, it only went up to 89. I was still, you know, 89 versus above of 100. So maybe that tells me I still haven't recovered from the trip and the time change by race day. And then since coming back, well, the day after the race was 73. That was my lowest. Then yesterday was back up a bit, 91. But then today, back down one to 90. So I'm still waiting for it to see you go back to 100 or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'll just have to see with more weeks. But I think it's just interesting to see. And once I have multiple races, also see the numbers at a race, maybe where I performed really well, see what the number is before then. Yeah, so.
Hopefully post San Francisco or Challenge Roth. What is
hopefully
your...
I'll be a freaking 120 race morning and I'll be just ready to crush. Yeah.
Well, I can say for sure, I know you got to Singapore a week before, but the time difference and the environment change can be pretty tough. It can be really tough on the HRV. I know that because I've tracked that myself many times. What is your...
is a HRV of 89 for me, did that mean right away, like, I couldn't do that well? Like, did it mean I just could do 95%? Or I don't know the answer to that yet.
Did you look at that number before the race or did you look at the number after the race?
Before the race, yeah. Like the last three, 4 days or 3 days, it didn't move much. It was like 88, 89. Yeah. I was hoping it was going to be, you know, like 88, 93, 98. But it wasn't happening.
All right. I know you've got a big day of training or you always have big days of training, but I want to ask you, finish off with, I guess this podcast is predominantly, at least it started off being solely running and we're obviously moving into triathlon a lot now. But I always ask this question to professional Ironman athletes because I'm curious. If you were given the challenge and you decided to stick with just running for 12 months, what do you think that you would go after time-wise for a half marathon and a full marathon?
That's interesting. I think a lot of triathletes do think about that because we all wish sometimes we could just chase one sport and see how good we could be at it. Because when I grew up, I was still doing swim, bike and run and tennis and football. But I was kind of running more. For example, when I was, 16, I did like an 8:47 3K. A year later or 2 years later, I was like 31:15 10K. Like I couldn't do an 8:47 3K now, even though I'm a way better athlete than when I was 16, right? But it's so different because runners, all they do is pretty much work on being fast. And triathletes, it's not really that, right? It's work on being strong, efficient, you know, a bunch of other things, but not really, you know, leg speed. Like for a runner to run a 5 minute mile is like, that's not fast in terms of leg speed, right? But for a triathlete, especially an Ironman athlete, like that's kind of quick. So to answer your question, half marathon, probably about maybe like a year of training.
Yeah, let's say that you focus on it for 12 months and you're able to do a few lead up races. What do you think ultimately after 12 months you would?
I'd probably want to be between 305 to 310K per K. So that's what maybe.
Be about 104 to 106. Yeah, 105. Yeah, around there.
Yeah, something like that. And then the marathon. Well, that one's easier because, I mean, guys like Tyler kind of have done it. Or Stixie, Brad Kahlfeldt. And they went, yeah, so I think about around 220 or dip under.
I would say purely based on the workout I saw with you, Vianna, to do 8x2K at threshold at 320, I would say those two goals are fully achievable. Maybe faster with 12 months of focus on it because, like you said, yeah, once you start training specifically for the marathon, you'd probably do a lot more workouts like 12 to 16 400s in 66, 67, which would make the 310 pace
in terms of
easier.
Yeah, and in terms of race time, I mean, it's an hour race, pretty much, give or take. Like, yeah, that wouldn't be scary at all. I feel like I could go pretty hard.
Well, Rudy, appreciate 45 minutes of your time on a busy training week as you get back into training, preparing for the upcoming races. Looking forward to catching up again in Boulder when I'm there. Hopefully, I can join you on another workout. We'll see if it fits in. But I guess people that, you know, many people listening are runners, so many people probably wouldn't know, but if they're interested in sort of following your journey. You have a YouTube channel, you post on Strava, which I love. You're on Instagram. Are those sort of the main three ways that you're sharing your journey?
Yeah, pretty much those are the three I post on. YouTube, Rudy Von Berg Racing, Instagram, Rudy Von Berg, and Strava, Rudy Von Berg.
Pretty simple. Appreciate your time very much, man. I'm looking forward to catching up again soon.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening in to the conversation that I had with Rudy Von Berg on Friday, April the 19th, and wishing Rudy all the best in the upcoming races, especially at Challenge Roth and at Kona. If you're enjoying the Sweat Elite podcast and you also enjoy the Sweat Elite YouTube channel, we would love to invite you to become a shareholder at Sweat Elite, which is basically a supporters club over at Sweat Elite that helps us contribute to making more content. The content at Sweat Elite is pretty pricey to produce, especially the video side, and we'd love for you to join us over there. And if you do, you score more content than if you are not a shareholders club member. You score a private podcast feed where we talk every single week about marathon training and more specifically dive into great detail about the training that I'm personally doing this year in trying to break 2 hours and 20 minutes for the marathon later in the year. We have a episode coming out every single week. We have bonus episodes also coming out on that same podcast feed about behind the scenes of filming these athletes and also some controversial hot takes that Max, Alex, and I talk about most weeks. So if you're interested in joining us, you score a lot more content and you also score access to all of the articles on the Sweat Elite website, which is over 450 articles that we've produced over the last 7 years all about running training. So there's plenty over there for you to get stuck into. To join the Shareholders Club, it's only $10 a month or $99 a year. Perspective, that's probably less than the cost of a lunch every month. And of course, $99 is about half the price of a pair of super shoes or trainers. So we'd love for you to join us over there. And if you can support us, we'd be super appreciative. And you can find the link in the description of this podcast if you're interested. Or you can head over to sweatelite.co and find the link in the menu, bright blue button that says Shareholders Club. And we'd love for you to join us over there and score plenty more free content. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you all and speak to you next week.